Lock and load.
Nobody knew who the hell he was.
Or have lived in a Muslim-majority country. I know because I am one of them.
How's that hokey-teeny stuff working out for you?
He's now our president. He's our president.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Taking back America, one listener at a time. This is the Bella D'Angelo Show.
Poor Benjamin. I know you're just sitting there going, oh, God. What is he doing to me tonight?
What now? What kind of story are you going to inflict on me tonight?
It's just like the company man. When the company man's sitting in that shack and he sees me pull it in and he goes, really?
Oh, boy. Here we go.
What is it? Or like when I ran in and I saw George Mann Jr. the other day and I was, but I'm learning. And I said, I am really wound up. And I said, normally, and he looked at me and goes, are you going to take it out on me? And I said, no. I said, no, I'm going to just take some potato chips and get on the road. I got a lot of driving to do. I'm learning, Benjamin. I don't even know where I left off. I know where we're taking off from here. I just I had to take a little break, though, Benjamin, because did anybody realize really what I had taken on? I mean, I'm exhausted from all my sextapating.
I think everybody else needed a break, too.
As Mississippi 2 said, I had to reload. You never want to be behind. And, I mean, really, when I signed up for the four in one day, even if you don't need one more, you know, and then it wasn't just four. I mean, it was four in different locations on top of four different guys in four different locations four times a day. I mean, I had to be in top AAA, you know, condition and performance for the company man's video. I mean, I took it seriously. And by the way, do you know the next time that you see that flashing light that says there's a flag waver ahead, be prepared to stop?
In the orange vest?
Along with his vehicle, with all the belongings and the dog tied to the handle, with the tent in the campground down the road, just waiting for the interlude with Isabella. You'll have a full visual next time you see it, and you'll be like, yep, there's one of little Isabella's boyfriends. We got to add a segment to the show, huh?
He's going to be waving a sign. Just with a stunned look on his face, standing there waving a sign.
Yeah, and the title will be Isabella Was Here. Just like when my company man today, when I called him and he said, I wonder if you ran away. Where have you been? And I said, I've been working my ass off. Even though my other company man said, yeah, right. He says, He said, and I said, why don't you come on my show? And he goes, I'm going to tell him you're lying your ass off. Because, you know, Benjamin, I don't do anything out here. It's all talk.
No.
Well, Rick, let's see. What have I done so far today? Well, I've been siphoning fuel. I've been running after some toilet scrubbers. I've been running around. I had conversations with Eric Rush today. Eric Rush is going to be a permanent on the radio show every Wednesdays. I talked to Frank Aguilla. Huh?
I said great.
Yeah. Yeah.
About
and he's going to
Eric,
cross-promote.
I said great about Eric, not about siphoning gas. Let me. Was it your gas you were siphoning?
I'm not going to tell.
I was going to say, why do I feel I don't want the details of that story?
Well, I've come a long way. I do not have to disclose everything. I have an extreme aversion to incarceration. Besides, it's enough to keep myself out of trouble considering, my company man ordered me to go down to Vegas. Like, I need to go down to Vegas anyways. And he said he's just helping a brother out when he told me. You know, and I always say this. There is not an HR department big enough to encompass this oil field. I mean, because, you know, Benjamin, you hear me about the everyday conversations and things that I'm being asked when I get on location or if we've gone through a weekend and the company man asked me, so did you get laid?
Is that an HR department question?
Did you get a fist fight? Did you roll a company man? A list of questions. I'm like, really? What do you think I did this weekend? Oh, Lord. What I did do this weekend, and I am very proud of, I am very proud of where this show is going and the direction. And the greatest thing is that, you know, and you gave me the biggest compliment, Benjamin. We were talking an hour ago before getting ready to go on the show. This radio show, we have to build the listenership here in the oil field. We have to build the audience here. And what have I been saying from day one of this radio show? The only people that I want to talk to, the only people that really know me, are my company man and the rig hand and all the guys that work up at the rigs. And when I talk to the company man, you know, they know, you know, and so many of them say, well, I'm going to hear about it on the radio. They know I'm going to talk about my visit with the company man. Well, what I came up with in this conference call on Saturday, you know, we came up with the format is I'm going out and I sit down with the company man and I say, what would you like me to talk about on the radio? What would make you tune into this radio show? What's going to make you say, I can't wait to tune in. She's on at, well, we'll go back to the 7 o'clock hour when we get things sorted out. But get them saying, I can't wait to tune in and listen to her. I can't wait. I heard she was talking to so-and-so. I heard she was out at so-and-so's rig. And then I said to the company man, I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask every single one of you company men to sign up for one night a month to come on the radio show. And I have more than enough of my friends and family out here, these company men, to sign up and make this about their radio show.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, do they realize they are the news? You're just reporting it? You're like their personal journalist.
Not only that, as I have said over and over, what?
Oh, I thought you were going to go somewhere else with that. Sorry, never mind. I misread the tone in your voice. I thought, here she goes.
What? Another one of the menu bars for the company man's video?
Yeah, not only their personal journalist, but I thought you were going to take off with that.
Fine, lead me right into it. I was trying to be a little behaved, but fine. As long as you brought it up, Benjamin, I called one of my other company men this morning. He asked where I'd been, and I thought I was busy working my ass off. And then I said, look, I said, we have designed the show to be all about what the company man wants to talk about. And he said, oh, it's got to be porn then. And I said, well, of course. And I said, when are you going on days off? And he goes, I'm going on days off tomorrow. And I said, okay. I said, well, while you're on days off, why don't you think about this so that when you get back on days on, I'll make good on my threat to come out there with ribeyes and grill, and you can tell me about what you'd like me to talk about your day, your night on the radio with me. And he said, porn? And I said, of course. And he goes, so it can be really kinky porn? You want to have really kinky sex with me? And I said, let your imagination run wild and tell me everything that you want when you get these on. And as I was saying it, I thought, wonder if this was taking me just a little bit too serious. I mean...
Yeah, you need to be careful with that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, those that really know me, and that's why when I was talking to this, I met somebody from Minnesota out here that I was telling them about the show, and then I started telling them about some of the titles, some of the shows to listen to, and then I was listening to myself as I was talking about the show In the Bleachers. And then I was talking about the Hello Kitty episode and being naked in the company man's FR shirt, and then I was telling them about, I was like, oh yeah, and this all started because a certain company man grabbed my cell phone and typed in sex, and then I want your sex, and I emailed, and I mean, come on, if you can't have fun, what is the whole point in all of it? I mean, how would you endure? How would you endure? Did Benjamin, did I send you that clip of North Dakota? That little, it's called Black Rush?
No.
Well, Charles Mepper,
do I want you to send it to me?
Yeah, it's the black lesbians in prison. Hey, you have no idea till you see
it. Yeah, I'm sure.
If you haven't figured it out, I'll come up with it. I was in my room the other night after work. One of the nights I was on the computer, and I had, you know what, Aaron texted me, Benjamin, we haven't heard from Aaron in a long time, and Aaron texted me and asked me what I was doing, and truth be told, I was watching Fox News, I was on my computer doing some other things, and because he asked me, and because I had nothing, I could just say I'm doing work, but instead, just to send him back a few, I told him I was watching Black Lesbians in Prison.
Which I'm sure that's what he wanted to hear. That's why he called. I hope you're listening, Aaron.
Anyways, where did I even leave off? How did you get me off course on this one? Oh, right. Yeah, I got my own self off course. Anyway.
She had that happen.
So the yes, I mean, this is the Company Man radio show. This is our radio show. All of us out here collectively together, you know, this is going into the, you know, we're reaching beyond the third year of being on the radio. We're going into syndication, and as I've always said, the only way we're going to get to syndication, that we're going to get to the point where people are like, you know, I can't catch her live, but boy, I can't wait to download and listen and let them talk about what they want to talk about. What do you guys want to hear about? Whether it's, you know, just plain insanity, madness, humor, the things that we come up with to say, and I mean, all of you guys that really know me know that this is all just material made for the show. It has ever since the beginning, and since I've been out here, and I've always said this, there's no way you could bring me back into a politically correct environment, Benjamin. I would be in so much trouble. There's no way. I can't go back. Once you go black, you don't go back. Once you get dirty, you don't get clean. But I've never had so much fun. I've never enjoyed what I'm doing ever before back in the corporate world. And I belonged in the oil field a long time ago. I just didn't know it. And I couldn't be more honored and more proud. And when the Company Men, some of the ones that don't know me, and when I'm talking about the radio show and they say, oh, you know, are you hearing all the dirt and the bad rap that as oil field trash gets, and, you know, I stand firm in my conviction and in my love for the Company Men and all of the men and women working in the oil field, they don't make them any finer than out here in the oil field. These are true, hardworking patriots, red-blooded, God-fearing, God-loving, love of family. You know, this is where the honest, sincere, direct, and I have never been treated with such kindness. I have never been brought in so quickly and adopted into real family and friends ever in my, and you know, one thing, Benjamin, back in Minneapolis, that's what I always just drove, that's why I didn't get along, is nobody was honest, sincere, or direct. Nobody actually ever really tried to get involved or get to know or be a part of helping someone. I mean, I'm very honest and straightforward, and there's nothing that you can't find out about me or know the struggles or, you know, why I came out here was to start over. And you know, I was honest about it from day one. But I am very, very blessed. I'm very blessed with all the things that have come to this point in my 3 years being out here with Isabel's Oilfield Services. You know, there's a great operational team. They're still getting to know how to deal with me. As I said to you right before I came on the air, I got them aggravated, Benjamin, my new business partner. I got them aggravated in such a short period of time. My Company Men are shaking their heads saying, really?
What a surprise.
Well, I'm very passionate. There's a very personal involvement. There's sweat equity that I've put into this this business of throne scrubbing. And as I still cannot believe the experiences that I have gone through in building this business. And Benjamin, I know. I mean, you listened to my day saying, what? I mean, I still, that's why I can't wait for Brian Sear to come out here. So let's try and stay on course here. I mean, where my business is, and then, you know, I have a sales job I'm representing. I'm selling diesel fuel, and I'm still in the learning stages of that. And then, I mean, the radio show. Benjamin, our phone conference on Saturday, we now have a team of individuals backing this radio show, so it's not just me running around, losing my mind, scurrying at the last minute, trying to line things up. We've got a format, we've got a plan, we've got a 30-day plan, and I'm just so excited the direction and the fact that we are turning all of the attention to the oil field, Company Men, the men that work up at the rigs, the men and women, the economy, the industry, you know, bringing light. And what I always said was the goal about this show was to bring good attention, dispelling the bad media, dispelling the myths about oil, because without oil, we can't exist.
Agreed. I mean, this so many products and so many industries that are dependent on oil outside of all anybody ever thinks about is gasoline. And gasoline, you know, I mean, that's a big part of it, but there's so many other products that are oil derivatives that nobody ever thinks about.
Well, we've got Bill Lanning joining us at the top of the hour, and we're going to get into some educating about oil. And I had a great day on Saturday, which if anybody wants to slow me down, Benjamin, my allergies get really bad out here. Taking that stupid Claritin, but I was taking the generic brand. And I couldn't figure out, I joked about having knee cancer when I had that bum knee for a while. I mean, you think I overanalyze and worry about things, really? I was so tired all the time, and nothing usually ever makes me tired. So I finally stopped taking that Claritin, but I was struggling a little bit on Saturday when I was down company man's rig and sitting there trying to, I told him, I said, let's build the show for tonight. And I got to say, these guys down at this rig, there's two of them, they are related, and then there's the two night relief guys, and I'm calling this one my second home. And, these guys knew me from when I first came out, when I was selling drill bits, and one of them took their label maker and punched out short bus and stuck it on my hard hat. I think that was the first time that I met him, and the nickname kind of stuck. And I said, "Look at you! You've come a long way. You're moving up in the world. You went from riding the short bus to you're driving the short bus, and you're siphoning the fuel and you're moving along. You're making progress. You're making." Whole. How about that, Benjamin? Making whole. And that's a perverted comment. That is what is stated up at the rig when you are drilling and you are making progress. You are making whole. So we are making progress. and these guys have, I appreciate it, and I'm so honored, and, they sit and they listen as I go through the struggles and the trials and the tribulations of, if everybody could do it, everybody would be doing it. I still am going through the learning phases of a business owner, of having employees, of now having managing partners, because I used to just be a sales girl, Benjamin. I mean, so many things are a new and learning process. But so by the time that we got to the conference call and then we figured out what we were going to do and the plan of attack, I was so excited to sit down with this company man and listen to him and lay out the what we're going to talk about here tonight on the show. And I want to, before Bill comes on, one of the things that, is completely, completely lost, and very few even understand, what got turned into a four-letter word in this country. It's capitalism. Did it not?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, anything successful. Yeah. in capitalism, I mean, because people don't want to have to work.
Well, the oil field is based on capitalism, and let me go into. I'm pushing myself, as I've always said. I'm expanding a little bit, and I'm preparing a little bit more than just completely winging it and just being free flowing and not actually going anywhere. You know, the moral. I got this from Ayn Rand. The moral justification of capitalism does not lie in the altruist claim that it represents the best way to achieve the common good. It is true that capitalism does, if that catchphrase has any meaning, but this is merely a secondary consequence. The moral justification of capitalism lies in the fact that it is the only system constant with men's rational nature, that it protects man's survival, and that its ruling principle is justice. Ayn Rand. Capitalism. Capital assets are privately owned and goods and services are provided for profit in market economy. Now, when I say that capitalism applies to the oil field, I mean it in this sense. Anyone has the opportunity. You know that when I was at my most struggling moment with my business, and this was about 6 months ago, Benjamin, when I sat down and I want to thank all of my brothers up at the rig, my first home, and particularly one of them who sat and he was exhausted at the end of his day, and he sat listening to little me in George Hatton Jr.'s office as I was just beside myself. Benjamin, I don't know if you remember the guys that worked for me, that I gave them housing, I gave them a vehicle, I gave them a company gas card. Excuse me. I was paying them top dollar, only to find out I knew that they were going to find their way to the strip club. That wasn't the shocking part. It's that they went to the strip club, consumed alcohol, and then drove my company vehicle, proceeded then to tell me about it. Okay, shocking. But then I sat there with Lord. And then as I sat there with Mississippi, and I was telling him this, and as I'm telling this, I looked at Mississippi and I said, they could possibly try this one again. And then out of my intuitive side, I called the cell phone. I gave him a cell phone too. And I called the cell phone, and these two geniuses answer my cell phone that I give them. And they're so intoxicated, wasted, they can barely speak. And I said, dear God, don't tell me you're in that company truck. And they were, of course, headed to another bar. So as I sat there, and Mississippi listened to me, and he said, you know what, there's no giving up, there's no quitting in the oil field. And I did not think I could endure anymore, Benjamin. You know this. And I said, and he said, you just haven't gotten the right people. Well, how telling he was, how apropos. I have very good people in place right now, my managing partners. And what he said to me when I kept telling him about all these different people, and he said, here's the bottom line. Anyone has the opportunity. In the oil field, anybody has an opportunity. It does not matter. As long as when you get here, the thing about capitalism and here in the oil field, you have the freedom offered of building your own career path. And
sure.
Based on your willingness and self-driven motivation, from the very beginning to, you know, the very entry-level position of what they call a worm, that's what they called it back in the day, to, you know, working your way up. Hey, you know, it is what it is. It's a term. And, you know, that is how you build any career. It's just that out here, you are also held to the principles of what it is to be. Also, you are required to be honest, and direct and hardworking. And you know, they base their decision, who they work with, who they hire, by looking them in the eye. And if you don't flinch, a handshake. I mean, things are still done on a handshake out here. However, the same reason as why I went into being a sales girl. Why did I go into being a sales girl? Well, it certainly wasn't because I thought I was just going to sit around and loaf around and expect a paycheck. No, I understood that as hard as I worked, I was determining my income and my paycheck. That's why I didn't want to be stuck in a cornered position where that was already determined, where there was a ceiling put above me. I didn't want a ceiling. And out here, you know, it's endless where you can continue progressing all the way up to the company man. And, you know, the better that we can spread and get people to understand, that was the whole basis of this country and what this country offered. It's just that we've gotten so lost.
I was just going to say that. It's not our political system. The fact that, you know, I get sick of hearing people talking about democracy, because we're not. We have a democratic electoral process, but it's capitalism. Capitalism provides more access to upward mobility to a greater number of the citizens than any other form of government. And there's no way around that. But it doesn't provide you success, it just provides you access to it.
Hang on one second. Sorry, I had to text the call-in number. We've got Mississippi, I think, joining the call. It's so lost, it's so misunderstood, and everybody seems to think that the business owner, you know, is just instantly making millions and millions of dollars and is to be hated and despised, but let me continue on here, and then we're going to pick up Bill here in a second. Be patient, Bill. We also have Mississippi joining us, I believe from my rig I call home. Free open market, open competition, profit motivated, and private ownership of means and production encourages private investment and business compared to government-controlled economy. Compared to government-controlled economy. For the love of God, government has no idea how to run business. All they know how to do is build big government and suck it out of us, you know, the hardworking people making money. Embrace capitalism, bastards we are, communistic bastards that we are. How dare you? How dare you want to get up in the morning and work? How dare you be me? You know what? I'm my own worst enemy, and I'm a pain in the ass, and I had to apologize to both my managing partners today because I get so passionate about this, and I get so, it gets a little overbearing, and I get a little over micromanaging, but as I told them both, I said, look, I'm the one with the sweat equity. I'm the one that scrubbed every living throne. I'm the one that told the company men, you know, I was going to turn this around, that I was going to find the right people, and eventually I was going to succeed. So when we're still having little hurdles, I take it very, very personal. Gee, go figure. But how do we start teaching capitalism in the home if so many of us haven't even, you know, we've gotten so far away from it, we don't even understand it, we don't even have the desire and the fire in us to go out and to start the business. And, I mean, social system based on principles of individual rights, political system of laissez-faire freedom, legally system of objective law. Rule of law as opposed to rule of man. Economically, when such freedom is applied to the to the phrase of production, its result is a free market. And so as I sat there with Company Man on Saturday talking about all of this, you know, and as he said, we talked about a whole lot of different topics that day, and we were just having so much fun as we were kicked back in the two Company Man chairs and steel toe boots up, and I don't know if this happened. I had to have somebody help me with this. I was trying to download AC/DC Big Balls. You know the song, Benjamin?
Yeah. I'm not going to sing it, but yeah.
But that's what this country has to get back to, is having big balls. I mean, right? Bill, you're with us. Yeah, I know you're giggling over there, Bill. You probably have mute hit. But, I mean, is that not what is that not what this country stood for, was having big balls? When do we walk around being these emasculated eunuchs?
Ever since we had Obama come in as our chief executive officer. I mean, you know, talk about somebody that's emasculated. There he is. Take a look at him. I mean, even when he threw out the first pitch at a baseball game, you know, he barely makes it to the home plate. I think it had to bounce once.
I love the picture of him on vacation riding the bike with the seat way too low and his helmet and his mom jeans.
Yes,
That was so hot.
Oh, hey, you know, some women out there really think he's, you know, an Eiffel. Eiffel of what? I don't know. But <he's>,
I mean, let's discount the anointed, okay? Whatever. What I'm talking about, the people that need big balls, are those that are actually in a position to stand some ground. But they've all lost their balls. They've all been emasculated, and they've lost their sense of urgency, their passion, where is their anger? Why is it us sitting here up at the rig, out on location, watching Fox News, sitting back and going, what is wrong with this country? Why aren't people standing up and say, are you serious? Are you kidding? Why aren't we doing anything? In any other country in the world, they don't have this type of chaos and madness and insanity where they're turning on the TV every single day and something just more incredulous is coming on the air. I mean, come on. But before I keep going down that road, let me finish on what we were also talking about, which is thermodynamics. Okay? Thermodynamics is about heat. And only so much heat in the universe, for something to get hotter, something else must get colder. Because you can't get something for nothing, right? I mean, unless you're, well, the 53%. But industry has to have something going out to come back in basic economics 101. And how do we become a producing nation again? How do we get back to the production so that we can even begin to have industry and capitalism? Well,
those three things.
Hang on, Bill.
Okay.
What we wanted to do, and what I was telling Mississippi, which Mississippi just joined us, but we want to talk about and getting people to understand, and that's why I'm so excited to have Mississippi with us tonight, because Mississippi is the best brother a girl could have. He's up at my home rig, and I was talking to him the other day and asked him to come on tonight, and Mississippi, you know more than ever, and trying to get people to understand what we're doing out there, the jobs that we are doing, drilling and pulling that oil out of the ground is more than what is being pumped at the gas station and going into the vehicles and being argued about the damn oil field and how people just have this negative connotation about oil, and they have no idea our dependency, our reliance, and that we could not even function if it weren't for the jobs that you guys are doing. Welcome, Mississippi. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm here. I'll give you a simple, the simplest thing in the world that everybody uses that is produced, that is helped produced by petroleum. That's just a piece of wire. A piece of electrical wire that's in your house, that's in your car, that's in your cell phone, that's in any electronic device.
There's a, out of, you take one 42-gallon barrel of oil, and that creates only 19.4 gallons of gasoline. The rest, which is over half, is used to make different things, plastics. I don't know, do you want me to list any of these right now, Bella?
Well, maybe we could, we'll keep adding the different products, but let me really introduce you guys to Mississippi. Mississippi works on the rig, up at the rig that I call home, and, you know, there's a whole lot more. Most people have this idea that somehow, you know, a rig just shows up and it's a real easy process. You know, you just pull it like you pull a little simple trailer behind you and you drop it down and you just simply drill a hole straight down and the oil comes gushing out and somebody comes along and captures it and then transports it, and it's this really easy process. And then there's the other side of the country that wants us to believe that we are killing everything in sight, we're destroying the environment, and we are completely harming everything in its path in this process. And it could be further from the fact, and part of my commitment, as well as educating people of the whole process of drilling all the way to the production side. And, you know, Mississippi, we just went through a rig move, and it was, you know, you guys had your challenges, but maybe you want to share a little bit about the process to educate the beginning process of drilling.
Share what? What, the process of moving the rig or drilling?
Yes.
Where would you like to start?
Well, I'll start with the rig, because the rig is, it ain't just dropping it down and drilling. I mean, it's a big jigsaw puzzle, and there's a lot of things that happens. I mean, you got to have men to put it together. You got to have cranes. You got to have a rig moving crew. Cranes, trucks, pole trucks, all that. You know, that's just not all part of the rig. The rig actually has to rent, and you know, it has to rent that equipment, it has to employ them people. And you can't just flop the rig down, it has to be staged. Got to make sure you bring in the right pieces first. In order to put it together, you got to start from ground up. And if you don't move the rig in a efficient, timely manner, and guess what? The rig just lost its contract.
Right.
You know? Or the crews that ran the rig, they're fired. More crews are brought in. And I mean, once we get set up, there's a series of events. Our rig is very electronical, and we have to make sure that all of our electrical is hooked up properly. No one gets fried. We've got to make sure we have no leaks in our mud tank system. That way we don't have no, you know, spills. Make sure our mud pumps are running properly. Everything working properly. Because once you start drilling, you can't stop. There is no stopping. Once you start, it's on. Because if you stop, it ain't just like building a house. You know, works 12 hours during the day. Stop. Let's go home. Nope. If you stop drilling, you have to constantly keep going, because if you stop, the hole can cave in on itself. Or if you get deep enough, then you have to worry about gases. You have to worry about fractures and formations, lost circulation. all that stuff. And all that stuff can lead to events like Horizon, the BP rig. I mean, that's not a very good example because it's offshore rig, but they had a series of events that nobody will really know what they are because you hear so many stories, but all they took was a blowout. They took a kick, and they took a blowout.
How much faster would they have been able to repair that if it had been on land instead of underwater?
Wouldn't have been.
Right.
Well, they would have been able to repair it faster, yeah. Because then you're not having to worry about ocean tides.
Right.
You're not worried about, you know, other things. You're not worried about pleasing certain people. Okay?
Containment would have been better also, right?
Yeah, containment would have been way better. But
and the reason why that we some of the problems that we had with offshore drilling has been instigated by the very people who want us to stop drilling for oil altogether.
Yes, you're 110% correct. There's only been two rigs I know of that's been lost, like casualty lost. Horizon, and the other one was a Chinese rig, and
yep.
It lost all its hands. All of them died. And that's been within like 20 years, a 20-year period.
Right.
Well, maybe more. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't keep up with that crap, but I mean, it's not that dangerous. It's not that dangerous to the environment.
No.
We've been doing it since the 70s or early 60s. We've been doing it when derricks were wooden, when we had mules, when
yeah.
we had stuff that would really just hurt people. You know, I mean, this is not. We've been doing this when we dig a hole in the ground, call it a reserve pit, suck water out of it, and let old base go back in there, and everybody was happy with it then.
Oh yeah.
You know, we'd clean it up, whatever. But you know, the technology is now. We have a solids control. The technology now is. So we can drill with oil base, and when we get our returns, he'll suck it from my tanks, and he'll actually clean it.
Yeah.
And he can actually clean it back down to diesel, and that's what oil base is. It's actually just diesel. It's just diesel and a couple other little things, and that's oil base. But see, when you spud, you start with fresh water because you don't want to contaminate the fresh water table. That's another thing. I mean, a drilling rig takes in a lot of stuff. I mean, we gotta watch out for the fresh water table. We gotta watch out for certain barriers, certain formations. I mean, we gotta watch out for the public. They talk about all this. The fracking's hurting us. The fracking's hurting us. Man, shut up.
Yes,
shut up.
That's basically the EDF, and they've backed off a little bit because the fracking companies have, the main ones, have gone ahead and stated they'll voluntarily undergo their regulations that they wish to impose. And it's a volunteer basis, but you don't hear anything about on that in the news that the oil rigs are taking on the added expense of doing these regulations that they're imposing, which a lot of them are already in effect. They just don't know it. And
one thing, I'm not interrupting you, one thing, the drilling rig is a contractor, okay?
Right.
The operator is the one that has the location and has the product, the oil, the gas, or whatever it is that he wants to get to,
right.
He goes out to whoever, contracts out the rig, and that's, you know, it's a contract. You're right. The rig company, the contractor, has to meet the requirements, not only the requirements of the operator, but the requirements of the federal government and the state, because the requirements for the state will be totally different.
Right.
I mean,
sometimes they overlap, but yeah.
Nope.
Nope.
Hey, you guys, I just want to jump in here real quick because George, Mississippi George Patton Jr. was helping me put out. Because I asked, I said, when was the first oil well drilled? It was in Titusville, Pennsylvania by Edwin Drake in 1859. It was 69.5 feet deep. They found oil seeping out of the ground. They decided to drill around there, started oil exploration. A certain man named Rockefeller developed monopoly in Pennsylvania, primarily as a flammable product for kerosene, then into fuel, which then I had sent the email out to Bill to, you know, like I say, so many people have no clue just how many different products come from oil. I mean, they have no idea. You know, I mean,
it ain't just the products. You're right. Anything plastic, ceramic, whatever, metal, it does not matter. It does not matter what it is. It is either carbon or petroleum-based, okay? Not only that, if you do downsize on your drilling, I mean, you're hurting the country. Then the country is dependent on a foreign oil aid. Not only that, then there are roughly 30 hands on my rig, 30 hands. That's four crews, okay? Let's say 45 people. That's the rig crew, directional, geology, mud, the two company men. And that's not counting the salesmen that are employed that come to this rig that try to sell stuff. That's not counting the casing crew that comes here and runs the casing. That's not counting the guy that made the casing or the drill pipe that we put in the ground. That's not counting the cement crews or the guys that made the cement that we put in the ground. And that's not counting all the truck drivers that bring us water, fuel, supplies. The list goes on.
Yeah,
that's
cruise.
Just 40 people. Affected by one rig,
right?
Okay, and there's rigs all over this country, not counting offshore rigs. If we go to offshore rigs, that's even greater. You have supply boats, I mean, all kinds of stuff. Downsize on drilling. I'm not saying this country has to have drilling, but it needs it because this country needs to be like a household, self-reliant.
Yes,
does not need to rely on nobody. It does not need to rely on nobody else.
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, instead of spending our money or sending our money overseas to support people that do not have our best interests at heart, and permission to drill where they're not allowing American rigs to drill.
You're right, man. You're right. I'll tell you what. In my household, you know what happens when money gets tight? Guess what? I stopped buying toys.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I start pinching my grocery budget. Guess what? I'm not going to drive all over God's creation. The government. Stop the Obama phone. Stop helping people. Guess what? If you stop handing out money, that fool will get a job.
Well, I doubt that. They'll find something.
No, yes, he
will.
He
hasn't worked any
okay,
day of his
okay,
life.
Okay. I'll make this real mean and real simple. Stop handing the money out. Either
right.
He'll get a job or he'll starve to death and die, or he'll be a drug head because he can't do nothing else and die, or he'll end up in jail and then maybe die, or he'll just die because he's too darn ignorant to learn how to live.
You know, Benjamin Franklin said that a long time ago, that he had traveled around the world, and every place he went, that the state was taking care of the poor. The poor only got poorer, and the number of poor grew. And where the state did not supply for them, the poor, guess what, got richer. They got off their duffs, basically, and they provided for themselves. And they became a viable member of their society, and they started to have a better life instead of waiting for table scraps from politicians.
Which leads back to what I said in the beginning when I said that the oil field is based on capitalism. And Mississippi, I don't know if you were listening when I was telling everybody that one of the most pivotal days in my experience with this business was when I was sitting there and just beside myself over this cleaning business. And I said, you were exhausted from your day, but the sweetheart that you are, you sat there and you gave me all this time listening when I was describing these last guys that were working for me and taking my company vehicles, getting drunk and all this crap. And you said, you can't give up, you can't quit. You said, you got to give everybody an opportunity. Everybody has an opportunity here in the oil field. And we all know from all of our experiences and everybody that's out here, I'm no different. I came out, you know, I had a vehicle and T-shirts when I came out here. And there's been certainly other stories of people having even less than that. But you have the opportunity to come here and work. And then, which is what I was saying, the American dream and spirit is lost, that you can have absolutely nothing and come out here, and as hard as you're willing to turn your, you know, to work and to climb back and to build your life and your future and your opportunity, it's here for you as long as you are willing to get up, go to work, be hardworking, honest, sincere, and be a team member, and you are welcomed and embraced, and you have all of the opportunity, which is here in the oil field, which is why I always say that we can go ahead.
Well, that's anywhere. The opportunity is anywhere, okay? All you got to do is want it. That's it. That's all you got to do. Just want it.
And you got to be put into a position where you want it also. In order to, and what I'm stating is reiterating basically what you had stated before, stop giving the handouts and start having people pull up their own boots.
I tell you, I'll give you a prime example. I don't know your name, but I'll give you a prime example, man. I can't remember what year it was. I was living in the Turks, all right? Resort. I was homeless, done, exhausted all my options. I did not have any other options. Didn't have any family. I didn't have option one. I had my truck because I refused to sell it because I didn't see no point in it. Why sell something that I might possibly make money off of? I have tools. Why sell something I might make money off of, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was not going to sell them. And everybody in the world was harping on me to sell them. But I refused. And eventually, one of my friends, he got me a job with a drilling company. And I stayed on that rig for the first year. My hitches were 7 days on, 7 days off. I worked 21 days and off seven for the first year. Lived in a motel on my days off. And I told myself, I said, I didn't care if I was scrubbing the toilets, picking up somebody's crap, somebody wanted to scream and holler at me all day, cuss at me, treat me like a dog. I didn't care. As long as I wasn't homeless.
Right.
That's all I cared about. I didn't care about nothing else. I didn't care about who hurt my feelings. I didn't care about who offended me. Didn't care. All I wanted to do was not be homeless. That's it.
Right.
And within 3 years, I'd say that's 3 or 4 years ago. 4 years, and I make, right now, I make $100,000 a year.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. All you got to do is want it. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's it. If the American public would just, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they're doing. But I know they don't give a damn.
If they'd start embracing what this country was founded on instead of swallowing the BS.
Yeah. They need to realize the country was founded on freedom.
Mm.
Because we didn't want to be ruled by some idiot overseas and taxed.
Right.
The country wasn't founded by a military. The country wasn't founded by a government. It was founded by a bunch of people.
Businessmen, actually.
Up, a bunch of people that stood up and told them they weren't going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
But they have to be in a position where they don't have something to bail them out. I mean, they have to get to the point that they don't have anything Because in order to understand and know how to survive and take care of yourself, you have to actually take care of yourself and want to. The problem is, we have 53.
A lot of it has to do with parents. People. Okay? And changes. I'm not saying the old ways were better, but I know they worked. Okay? I'll give my grandparents, for example. They had a 10-year difference. 10-year difference. My grandfather was like 26 or 27. My grandmother was like 18, somewhere in there. If that was today, that would be frowned upon. But you know what? They married. They stayed together. They stayed faithful. He served in the military. She still stayed faithful to him. They had 3 kids. And he passed away not too long ago. And she has yet to try to find anybody else because she loves him. The divorce rate in this country, astonishable. Just out there. Because everybody gets together and says, oh, well, mommy and daddy never fought. Yeah, because mommy and daddy never fought in front of you, dummy.
Right.
Kids need to see that crap. As much as you think it hurts them, make them better. Because if you shelter a child for 25 years, in 25 years he ain't learned nothing. He's going to live a quarter of his life. And he still ain't got crap, but debt to a college or to the government. And he got nothing. Hell, back then, you might get kicked out when you're 16 years old. You can't do that now. You got to go to high school. You got to go to school. I'm not down in school. I'm not down in school at all. But, I mean, crap. If the schools were actually doing what they were supposed to be doing, high schools, elementary, high school, college, then why do we have so many stupid people? I mean, why? We got so many intelligent people that are so book smart and can do God knows what, which power to you, man. Power to you. I am proud of you, whoever you are. But, man, there are people out there who don't know how to change their oil, can't even dig a ditch, can't even swing a hammer.
I stand the ground that book smart is one thing, but it can be very dangerous, and there's a lot to be said about street smarts and common sense. There's also a lot, and I, you know, from my journey and from where I came from, you know, the things and the things that I believe in, I was hatched this way. I lived a unique situation that these weren't taught to me. I believe that a lot of my survivalists came from just that. I mean, I had to survive. But I was also always, I was entrepreneurial in the way that I looked at things from an early age. I was reminded quite some time ago about somebody that gave me their prized record collection of a rock group. And what did I do with it? I was pretty young, and what did I do with it? Of course, I sold it. I sold it for a profit. But I was always thinking entrepreneurial from the very beginning, and that's all I ever wanted to do. You know, that I couldn't wait to get out into the workforce, but also I wasn't handed things. You know, the problem with our generations is it's been too easy for them. There are too many generations removed away from struggling and not having. One of the conversations that I have all the time is, like, how many generations are we away from the depression and from the draft? I mean, it's been too easy. The stupidity and the dumbing down is what has happened to this country. Well, there's a quick wake-up call. And we're all seeing this because, you know, we've now got a country where, because of the agendas and what the administration and the purposeful dismantling is now affecting those that really didn't think they were going to be affected. They actually thought that they were they were the golden children of the anointed. They were the ones that, you know, they signed up for the free phone and the free checks that were supposed to be coming in the mail for them. Go ahead.
Exactly. I'll tell you what. You know that Navy Yard shooting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know. You know, I may be just putting my foot in my mouth right now, but you know what? That's just like that Fort Hood too. Those are military. Those are supposedly military installations, correct?
Right.
What does the military have? Trained people that know how to kill and use guns. Can they have weapons on base? No, they cannot.
They can.
Why not? A cop can walk around with a damn gun, then a damn military, a military official should be able to walk around with a sidearm. If he is charged with defending this country, then he can defend it from foreign and domestic enemies, no matter who they are. And that's what he's charged with. That's what a military person knows. That's what he's supposed to do. That's what he's supposed to do. Give him a weapon then. Let him carry a sidearm. What's the big deal why they can't? A cop can. A civilian can. A civilian can go get a carrier permit and carry one. Military official, he has to be on some sort of special detail, security detail or something. That's a load of crap. If people, having guns is not a problem. It's not. It's not a problem. It's the people that have them are the problem. It's the people that don't have them.
That's exactly right. And that's what.
And we're also at a point in this. We're also at a point in this country where there is so much anxiety, depression, fear. There is a majority of this country that have been down for so long. And let me, you know, when I left Minneapolis, we were already in a double dip recession, and that was over 3 years ago. I mean, I didn't leave because I couldn't get a job anywhere in Minneapolis. I just had a 15-year career in sales. It's the thing. The reason I left was because I was selling in manufacturing, the heart and soul of our country. When we were producers, was that we used to manufacture something. We used to actually make something and sold it for a profit. Except that the problem was that we were already overregulated. We were already overtaxed. We were already having to send overseas in order to compete. And I left because I saw the writing on the wall that if everybody remained as checked out and tuned out and just sitting around, you know, watching the bad crime scene, the bad accident, without actually figuring out how to stop it, that we were going to be in a position where Minneapolis is now. Manufacturing is basically gone. And I moved out here because I knew that I would have a career, and if I needed to go into production and work on a rig and even go overseas, I knew that I had a long run here. It's just that, you know, we've gone so far, and we're so beyond the point, and where I was going with the shootings, that our country has been down and depressed for so long. People actually walk around saying, when I had a job, people don't even realize when they look at how many, you know, the foreclosures and the high levels of unemployment. And when I talk to people today, you know, Mississippi, I talked to somebody today, I can't believe some of the conversations that I have with people that tell me, I mean, they're middle-aged, without vehicles, without driver's license, and out in a place that, I mean, there's no public transportation out here. And yet out here and expecting, and you know that I went through this with all the people that, and expecting other adults to pick them up and provide transportation. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, the last place on the planet that I would go without a driver's license or a vehicle would be North Dakota. I mean,
yeah.
No, really. I mean, I my Jiggly Rabbit ass would be down in a city where you had public transportation or where you could live and work. I mean, you can't even live here. You can barely afford to live here. And then yet I sit back and I say, where in the world did people lose sight of the fact of how to get up and know and understand it is their responsibility for their life and for their future and for their retirement? Well, of course, this all started a long time ago when Social Security started. Go ahead, Mississippi.
You know where that went? It happened right when they was about 14 or 15 years old and they were in high school and they didn't have no big responsibilities but making the grade. Then mommy and daddy bought them a car. And then all they had to do was play football and show up to practice or go to cheerleading, you know. Then they'd go to college and get in the sororities. Wouldn't have to do nothing but party, make the grades. Mommy and daddy still supplying the vehicle. And by the time they're 25, mommy and daddy's just fed up with them. Throw them USOL. You're on your own. 25 years old, 26. You don't know jack dilly squat about life. And I'm not saying that everybody should know, because life is going to be different for everybody. It's going to be your own choice, your own decisions. But if you're not making those decisions when you're younger, and you don't realize consequences that they can have.
I think I was blessed with a couple of really great kids. Both my kids wanted to work while they're going to college, to high school. And my daughter, I always had to put the reins on her, you know. Well, you have to get your grades. Make sure you get your grades. And she got her grades. And she also worked sometimes 20 to 30 hours while she's going to school. And she still has that work ethic. And she cannot, for the life of her, fathom why people will sit around and expect others to do for them. She's had conversations with people about, well, you're the very person, you know, that you should be voting for Democrats because they can do so much more for you. And she'd look at him and says, I do for myself. I said, I don't need handouts. And that's the way that she was brought up. I'm glad that they listened to me when I was talking to them, because both of them are self-starters now. They will go out and do what they have to do. They realize that a lesson, and I told them what my dad told me a long time ago, the world owes you nothing. You have to go out and do for yourself and do for your family and then do for your friends. And the more you become prosperous, the more people you can help out.
Yeah. But the number one thing is you can't take care of yourself no matter what the situation is. You can't take care of nobody else.
Right.
It don't matter if your family.
And you have no right demanding other people to take care of other people until you can take care of yourself. And then you dip into your own pocket and start helping other people and encourage other people to do that. But don't demand other people. And I'm talking about those who want to have more and more taxes, get into class warfare.
When I was about 5 or 6 years old, I remember seeing them damn Home Depot or Lowe's commercials. And he'd have that truck, and he'd come up to a crossroad, and the sun would be over here, and he'd be driving supplies. There'd be a storm over there. The truck would turn towards the storm, and it said, We go and supply to those in need. We donate. Yeah. When was the last time you donated, bud? When was the last time I bet you donate to Home Extreme Makeover all the time. Do you donate to anybody else? You know? When was the last time a car manufacturer said, we're going to build a car for the poor man just so they can afford it? I think the last person that did that was about Henry Ford.
Mm-hmm. Washington, was he?
No. I ain't seen nobody do it yet. All they want to do is build something a little bit more.
When was the last time that somebody worked for a poor man? Where I'm going with this is when I started out the show and talked about capitalism got turned into a four-letter word, entrepreneurialism. Those of us who are making money, those of us that are making money and making a profit, you know, we are the bad, evil ones. We are also the ones that are expected to take care of the rest of the country, which, by the way, this is not a poor country. And when you look at the things that those that say that they are poor, they have more flat screens, designer clothes, vehicles, homes than ever before when this nation did have poor. But when did you ever work for a business owner that was poor? So when you look at this whole madness, all this insanity, all of this that is destroying and tearing down and forcing the heart and soul of what this country, you know, the business owner, the people that are willing to take the risk, take the chances, do the things that, and you know, I said, you know, when I was talking to Eric Rush earlier today about the radio show, and he's, you know, Eric Rush from Fox News, he's going to be on a regular basis on Wednesdays, and you know, we were talking about all this, and I say all the time, I mean, I am very blessed to have a business. I'm blessed that at a time when most people told me, you know, outside of the oil field, I wouldn't, you know, how many people told me I'd never go into business? And then to have, you know, my brothers up at the rig that have, you know, I mean, I don't have a home outside of here. This is my home. That's why I am so, you know, I will stand, don't cross my family. Don't come and even try to talk the negativity about oil, because these guys saw as I came in struggling to understand how to run a business, let alone in the oil field. I've never been in the oil field before, let alone the type of people, and then to bring me in and to, you know, to bring me into the fold, bring me into the family, give me the time and the advice. And look at, you know, you guys see, I mean, Mr. B, you guys see me all the time because I'm, well, as George Patton Jr. says, I'm in his office more than he is when I'm blowing up his microwave and making tuna fish and doing all the things that I do. But I mean, well, you know, when did you work for a poor person? And when you look at this and you sit back, and that's why I say, when are we going to? And when the company man yesterday, when I was out there, and he gave me the material that we're going to base the show off tomorrow, and when are we going to? How, you know, we've got to get people thinking. We've got to get people listening, and people walking around and asking.
Not only that, you ain't got to get nobody thinking. You just got to get them to believe in the country again.
Yeah.
That's it.
You got to get them to stop believing in Marxism, which is what it is. They don't realize it. Anytime you state that it's Marxism, they, you know, oh, it's not. You don't know what you're talking about. I know exactly what I'm talking about. I've talked to people who've lived under Marxist rule. I've talked to people who have been destroyed. Their family is destroyed by Marxism, socialism. You had Marxist socialism, you had fascist socialism, and now you have Obama socialism. And that's just a continuation of Carter socialism, FDR socialism.
I'm not going to say Obama's a socialist. I'm just going to say he's made a lot of bad choices. I may not know all the information that he's had at his hands, but I know he's made a lot of bad ones.
Well, okay. He's been trained.
And I know.
He's been trained
since
he was a kid to be a socialist, to be a Marxist. His grandparents were Marxists. His parents were Marxists. His cousin Odinga, who ran for president in Kenya, ran under the communist ticket, and Obama was able to funnel $900,000 of funds to him. He had his two mentors in his life, Frank Marshall Davis and Jeremiah Wright, are both Marxists. The people that he's hired are Marxists. He has been a Marxist all his life. That's all he knows.
But all I'm saying is if people want to know what's wrong with the country, it's the people that elect the people. There's no more faith in the country. They're too worried about what are they going to get. Forget what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? Go work for it.
I remember somebody once said to me that I really cared for a lot. He said, what did this, and he was a relatively conservative person, ever do for me? He was a president. And I looked at him and I said, whatever happened to ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country?
Yeah, exactly. What can you do for your country?
I mean, what happened to the people who believed in what John F. Kennedy said, what Martin Luther King said? And now they're trying to rewrite it and state that, oh, they didn't say that really. They didn't really mean that.
That's just like the Constitution with the gun laws and all this other crap. The Constitution is a set of what I call laws, not to protect the people. They are to protect the people, but to keep the government in check.
Yeah.
That's to keep the government in check. Because, like I said earlier, this country wasn't founded on the government. It is founded by a bunch of people that got together, that got tired of a bunch of crap, that had guns. And they said, you know what, screw you, buddy. If you want to do something about it, come over here. We're waiting. The Constitution says we have the right to bear arms. Not from the British, you know. I heard somebody say, the British ain't never coming back over here. Who cares about the British? He says we have right to bear arms against foreign or domestic enemies. Enemies inside this country.
Right. And we have plenty of domestic enemies in this country. According to Obama, they're all their right-wing, conservative, Republican types.
Oh, I'm not talking about just them. What about the fools that are shooting people?
Yeah.
What about the fools that come over here and do terrorist attacks?
Right.
If a citizen shot one of them people, he'd be tried for murder.
Yeah.
Instead of being looked at as defending his country.
Yeah. Well, it's like Feinstein. She's gotten on her soapbox again, you know, about we need to do more to work out gun control for our country. And I'm seriously starting to think that the DNC and all those idiots involved are actually working on recruiting people to go out and do these things.
I go back to, as I was asking one of my company men, we're at a desperate time in this country. We're at a desperate time, and in desperate times, people take desperate measures. And people are tired, sick, broke, exhausted. There's not much hope out there. And even those that are working the jobs that felt like they were pretty secure, you know, everybody. When did you ever think that the government was going to push you and tell you and mandate and lower your hours? Lowering your hours and force you to go and find a second job, which you can't even
find
a second job.
That don't make no sense to me. You know, all right, the government charges taxes off the hours you work. Why are you going
to
cut your taxes?
Well, it's got to do with Obamacare. It's all got to do with the regulations of Obamacare, and it's also got to do with, think of it this way, Mississippi. I know, but Mississippi, look at it this way. When they lower those hours and they force people to work less hours, it increases the dependency on the government.
Yeah, but I just want to say something. Those hours, I'll give you a prime example of Walmart. Walmart's supposed to be a family business run by a family, okay? Walmart's been at 30 hours for everybody for the past 5 years now. I know because I tried to work there before I got in Oldfield.
Well, that's heavy.
My hours were going to be 30 hours a week. That was a full-time work week. I looked at them and laughed and walked out.
That's what's happened. Every time you have an increase in minimum wage. You have people that, poor people, who cannot do anything. Because I remember way back when the minimum wage went up to $1.35 an hour. Kind of shows you how old I am. But what happened was my buying power went down.
Yeah.
My number of hours that I was able to work went down. Because the employers had to cut down on the cost. And
the bottom line is we have to get back, and I got to jump in here, you guys, because we're coming up to the top of the hour, and we only have a couple of minutes left, because I've shortened the show a little bit from 2 hours down to an hour and a half, but because I need a little bit more work time during my day. But, you know, Thomas Jefferson studied all the countries of their fall, and he predicted all that has happened. And, how corrupt the English government is. I mean, that's what why we all fled, and we are here today as a result of the decisions that we have made yesterday. But all we can do is from this day moving forward, and
right.
what our job is to get people to believe in this country again, to believe in America, to believe in the opportunity, and what we really all need to do is grow big balls. I mean, where are your balls? Where are you going to stand up and say, that is just wrong? There are so many crimes against the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and everything the Founding Fathers fought for and shed their blood for. It is endless, but as I always say, our job is to get out and to motivate and to inspire, and that is the whole point in this show, and to bring the voices of us that are doing the hard work here in the oil field, and it's not just here in North Dakota, but throughout the rest of this country and internationally, and spreading the gifts and the lessons, and to bring the real perspective in the day-to-day of what we're doing and trying to get people to be inspired again and get one more person listening, one more person that tuned in today that said, you know what, there's something that they said, because you know what, that's how you get people to think and to listen, is share your life experience and get people to wake up tomorrow and say, you know, there's something that they said, I'm going to think about that. Maybe I should think differently. Maybe this doesn't make sense. I mean, is there not true independence and self-reliance? And is that not where you build your confidence and your sense of further committing to developing and achieving and growing and going after more? I mean, I can't imagine a worse, confinement, incarceration, than being answering and being reliant on something that has got you chained as a slave to begin with.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to just say one thing also. Obama has taken, for some reason, the shooting that you mentioned about the Navy Yard. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm listening to you.
Okay. He has taken that as an opportunity, what he feels is an opportunity, to denigrate the one group that he really fears, and that is conservatives. And he misnames them as stating them to be extreme right-wing Republicans. And he's trying to give advice to the Republican Party that they should not shoot themselves in the foot by catering to a fanatical branch of their party. And it's not a fanatical branch of their party. It's conservatives. A lot of conservatives do not consider themselves to be part of a Republican Party or any party, but as conservatives. And one thing I just want to say to the GOP and any other conservative groups out there, are you going to listen to the advice Obama gives you on how you should be running your campaign?
Wait a minute, Bill. We gotta wrap this up because we're at the top of the hour. why would anybody listen to anybody? And why would anybody listen to the Anointed to begin with? The rest of the world. Listen, I'm going to close out. Bill, I let you have your, and then I'm going to let Mississippi close out before I take it from here. Look, we watched the State of the Union. We watched as one of the most internationally embarrassing. You want to talk about having no balls and then completely waffling back and forth, and the teleprompter was gone, and he couldn't have gone further to both, and then for Putin to step in and to save his rear end, and, you know, I made joke of it, but really, I mean, you know, for Putin to come in and be perceived now as almost the leader of our country, I mean, this is, it's just gotten to the point where it's completely insane, and there isn't anything that comes out of the Anointed's mouth that makes me question or wonder or anything. There isn't. I just plainly, I don't pay attention. My job and my focus is to get the rest of the country, those that we can save, those that we can get to listen, those that we can get to think, and those that we have a hope of getting them inspired and believing in this country again. That is my job. So if I have got you to tune in, if I've got you to listen, if I got you to stay on longer than the first 5 minutes with the midgets and the lesbians and all the madness and the insanity, well, then I'm doing my job. And Mississippi, I wish you would be on a regular basis. I would love it.
I was going to buy that one or not. I'd
have to work that in my schedule somewhere.
Well, my people will talk with your people because I know where to find your people, and I'm not that far away from your people.
Yeah.
Mississippi's like, uh-oh. Well, this was a good show, and, you know, the format has changed. It's all about what the company man wants to talk about, what you know, you guys and gals that are working up on the rig out here in the oil fields. You know, all of us, well, this is our radio show. This is your voices and what you'd like to talk about because we're building the listenership and the base here. So once we build here, you know, we got to make whole because we're headed towards syndication. Once we hit syndication, it's got to be a AAA show every single night. And I just couldn't be more honored and excited and to have the family part of the show and the bigger family of all those. Bill, you've been on the show since practically the beginning of when the show started.
Yeah, pretty close. And I've been in and out and in and out. And I'd like to, I probably will call in tomorrow if I am free to listen to you and Eric talk a little bit. I enjoy his ability to have a set of balls like you're calling for all of us to have. Because he was, he revealed a lot about Obama that a lot of people didn't know about this unknown senator from Illinois.
Well, and he also, you know, his goal is the same as my mission, and that is to also talk about the things that are not being discussed on Fox, which is about the only thing close to, and it's not fair and balanced anymore, but that's our job, And so it'd be great if you could join us tomorrow night. And Bill, I as I'm watching the clock, I gotta close out.
Yeah, you gotta go.
And but I'm glad you're here. And Mississippi, it's great that you were on tonight. Thank you so much.
Sure thing.
Love you, brother. All right, I'm gonna close out with AC/DC, Big Balls, because that's what we gotta have. And so I'm gonna say good night. God bless. God bless America. And ciao.
Well, I'm upper, upper class, high society. God's gift. Ballroom notoriety, and I always fill my guestless. No one can take you higher. Everybody says I've got great balls of fire. I've got big balls. Oh, I've got big balls. And I've got big balls. Dirty big balls. And he's got big balls. And she's got big balls.
But we've got the biggest balls of them all.
Some balls are held for charity and some for fancy dress. But when they're held for pleasure, they're the balls that I like best. My balls are always bouncing to the left and to the right. It's my belief that my big ball should be held every night.
Oh,
we've got big balls! We've got big balls!
Muslim majority country. I know because I am one of them.
How's that hokey cheesy stuff working out for you?
He's now our president. He's our president.
If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
Taking back America, one listener at a time. This is the Bella D'Angelo Show.